have it.
Okay, and you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody. Oh, well, but they wanted to hear it again.
Well, that's the normal song for you.
Anyways, you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KAGNLP, Salida. And this evening, I've got my co-host is Shannon. And our special guest this evening is Tom Horn. But before we get into that, I wanted to say that we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And Truth Quest programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And if you want to send an email to the program, it's khen.dj@gmail.com. And if you have any questions, but Tom Horn, we are really lucky to get him on our program. He's an internationally recognized lecturer, publisher, radio host, and best-selling author of several books, and this is with his wife, Nita Horn, of several books, including the newest, Forbidden Gates. Their works have been referred to by writers of the LA Times Syndicate, MSNBC, Christianity Today, Newman Magazine, WorldNet Daily, Newsmax, White House correspondents, and dozens of news magazines and press agencies around the globe. Thomas has been interviewed by U.S. congressmen, senators on his findings, as well as featured repeatedly in major media, including top 10 talk shows, America's Morning News for the Washington Times, CBN, The Harvest Show, Coast to Coast AM, Prophecy in the News, and the Southwest Radio Church, to name a few. Thomas received the highest degree in honorary doctorate bestowed in 2007 from legendary professor Dr. I.D.E. Thomas for his research. Boy, I'm just mush tonight. Research into ancient history, and has been endorsed by such national leaders as Dr. James Kennedy. Thomas, you there?
I am, Melody. Thank you for having me on your program.
Oh, well, I'm just really honored, and Shannon's here to kind of help us just lead into some of the incredible information I know you've got with your new book, Forbidden Gates. And I want to say the news views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KAGN staff, volunteers, and board of directors. And do you have anything to add to that you'd like to get into, or you just want to go ahead into your forbidden gates? I am not.
It's just a normal night.
I can't say anything tonight.
Well, actually, Melody, it makes me feel a lot better because I've had this terrible cold, as you might be able to tell by the sound of my voice, doing radio last night, and I felt terrible. I kept coughing on the show, and so any flubs you can make whatsoever will make me feel a whole lot more comfortable with the whole idea.
Well,
please don't encourage that.
Okay, Tom, how did you get started into research on what is being called the coming human enhancement revolution?
It's very interesting. I think you're in Oklahoma, or are you in Arkansas?
No, we're in Colorado, in the middle of
okay,
the state.
Okay, well, I'm completely off then. Well, anyway, it was. Actually, now it's probably been about 20 years ago. I was a freelance writer, and the largest newspaper out of Oklahoma had asked me to write a special feature during Halloween, which is where we're at now, right, on the history of Halloween. So I was doing that, and frankly, now I can't recall what I was doing. The Internet was barely invented. I mean, email was a big invention at the time, and so I was doing some kind of research, and I had books piled around me, and I was writing about the history of Halloween, but I came across a news story, and I don't even remember by what publication, but it had the term in it, transgenics, and I had never heard this term before, and it was very intriguing to me because I could kind of understand transgenics, transgenes, that, you know, we were talking here about either the manipulation of genetics or something like that. And, of course, you know, at the time there was a lot of research that was being done in trying to map a human genome, and the genetics revolution was being born, and there were a lot of promises that were being held out that, you know, we're going to map the human genome, we're going to find the cure to basically every disease mankind has ever experienced, and that's still part of the promise that's being held out. But anyway, this term really intrigued me. And so I started looking into what is transgenics. And, of course, you know, ultimately I learned that it was really just talking about the taking of genes from one species and through genetic engineering integrating it with the genetics of a different species, transgenetics. So that today if you're talking about a transgenic animal, you might be talking about a pig that is part fish genome. And so that would be a transgenic pig. Here in the state of Missouri where I live, we're actually raising, we have a special farm here in Missouri where they're actually raising human pigs. These are pigs that have human DNA, human genetics, and the purpose behind these pigs are to raise organs for a xenotransplantation that then could be, you know, used for human donor. Organ donor projects, because in the past, you know, the idea was that you would be able to take donor organs from one human and implant it into another human, and this was going to be the cure also for a lot of diseases. But we have this problem with donor rejection, and so also the waiting lists are very long. You know, if you get on a kidney donor list or whatever, you might spend the rest of your life and die waiting for somebody to get killed in a car wreck. So the idea was we were going to raise humanized organs inside animals, but they were being rejected. Well, now through you know, blending human genetics with pigs, you have a transgenic pig, but the organ, because it has human DNA, is more likely to be accepted into the host body of the person who's waiting for a donor organ. So anyway, that's, you know, without completely getting off track here, that's basically what a transgenic animal is, and it was the discovery of that term that caused me to start doing research, trying to figure out what transgenics meant. That ultimately led to 20 years of research, literally thousands of hours, several books, hundreds and hundreds of radio shows, television shows, three documentary movies this year alone. And frankly, you know, my degree is in theology. And so I would have never imagined myself winding up being a leading spokesperson for conservative bioethics. But for some reason, somehow, some way, you know, I just wound up being where I'm at today. And I've got friends like Sharon Gilbert, whose background is in molecular biology, that I stack around myself whenever I have questions that I'm not able to answer because I'm not qualified as a scientist. I'll go to these other conservative bioethicists, Wesley Smith, people like that, and they're able to provide some of the answers for me. My interest in particular, though, has to do with the theological aspect of what we're talking about, the genetics revolution, altering living organism, altering life forms. Is there something, are we crossing over a barrier that God put in place? Is it potentially prophetic? Those are the things that interest me.
Yeah, I've caught you on several programs, and apparently you're on lots of programs, but the most exciting thing about what you're dealing with is all over TV and in a lot of the science fiction areas. And so those that aren't, if you're not into science fiction, you may miss some of this, but I'm finding I've been kind of following the program Fringe, and it's just one. I mean, there's movies like Anatomy 2 that get into some of the bionic medical ethics, and you just captivated me when you start doing one of your programs on the science that's behind it, let alone the religious connotations. So, go ahead.
What happened that actually led to the religious connotations, or even the prophetic connotations, was because when I discovered that term transgenics, it was early on in the genetics revolution with regard to genetic engineering. Today, you know, it's all over the place. Genetically modified crops, genetically modified animals, genetically modified human-animal chimeras, and hundreds, thousands, literally, of laboratories around the world. But 20 years ago, it wasn't. And by trying to understand, I was still, you know, there wasn't very much on the Internet at the time. I was still going into libraries. I was trying to understand what these terms might mean. The problem was the science was so new, excuse me, we were riding the bicycle while we build it, if you know what I mean. there wasn't any peer-reviewed science journals that were really talking about the pros and cons, the questions that I was asking. You know, what is the good that would be envisioned by blending different living creatures? What are we trying to accomplish by doing that? And also, what might be if there is the potential for a Pandora's box, a biological nightmare, something that could get out of, you know, you're crossing over species barriers, what might happen? Prion contamination? You come up with a new disease strain that is neither native to animals or humans because you've blended the two now and maybe you've created something else. I wanted to know what science was saying. And the problem, Melody and Shannon, the problem was that the science was too new. There wasn't really very many protocols for the science, and there wasn't a great deal of research that had been done that could provide a backdrop against which people could put out scenarios for the good or the bad. But what happened was, in going into libraries and using computers and trying to find information having to do with crossing over species barriers, what happened was I kept coming up with a very old story, an ancient story, and it's told in the mythos of every culture in the world, of a time when the so-called gods came down, or the flying geniuses, according to the Sumerians, came down, the watchers in the Bible, and in the Book of Enoch and some of the other pseudepigraphical and apocryphal texts, came down, fallen angels, powerful agents, whatever you want to call them, aliens. People use all kind of terms around them, but this legend exists in the historicity of every culture in the world that they came down, and what did they do? They blended humans with animals, and some records even include plant life. They crossed over these genetic barriers and they created a brand new construct. By blending them all together, they created a body into which they could become incarnated. And so in the Bible, you have the legends of the watchers and the giants who were born, the Nephilim that come under the judgment of God. In the Greek mythologies, you have Zeus coming down using the genetics of a woman or marrying with a woman, out of whom Hercules, a mighty man, a giant, or a man of great power, is born. So you had this legend was all around the world, and that's what I kept coming up against, and that was what was kind of startling to me. And then one other quick thing was I also found this in ufology, that in the study of, you know, alien abduction, what are aliens, what are UFOs, that the best researchers in the world in that field were also talking about how whatever these things are, they seek out DNA, they seek out human genetics, they abduct somebody and they remove ovum or blood or cell matter, scoop marks turn up in bodies of flesh, and whether it's Jacques Vallée or Dr. John Keel, Dr. John Mack, all of the best researchers found over and over this redundancy, which they too compared to all of these ancient stories. They referred to it as being identical to biblical demonology, being identical to the legend of the giants and the watchers. So that there seemed to be a phenomenology. There seemed to be something that had been occurring since the beginning of time, in which some agency, some superintelligence, had an interest in blending genetics. And so what was ironic was I started out trying to find out, you know, just some basic answers to science as we know it. And I wound up way over here in mythology, and I went through a process of conversion in my thinking where I started, I came to ultimately believe, and not over a short period of time, it took me at least a decade, in which I came to believe that the mythos, which I had completely rejected, I was what they call a Sethite guy, I did not believe this story of angels marrying with women out of which giants were born. I didn't believe it. Today I'm completely a believer in it. And it was just a process of looking at all these ancient stories and how it compared to transgenics and the crossing over of species barriers that gave birth to the legend of the giants. Well, in any case, I didn't mean to ramble, but that was how I wound up asking these questions that are more metaphysical than they are scientific.
Well, you would think that with all the genetic work that they're doing, do you think that it's coming through in the DNA when they're doing this, looking into the background, they're finding this kind of historical information within there? I'm not saying that correctly.
A lack of it.
Yeah.
Right? Missing links and whatnot, you know? Seems like we're hearing a lot of detailed why our DNA isn't native, why it can't be shown to have a natural evolution, because there's some kind of missing step that took place that could easily be explained, not necessarily, but could be explained by a direct, you know, specific genetic intervention. In a scientific way, in an unnatural way, or there's some other explanation, such as, you know, just a natural interbreeding, such as described in some books, including Genesis 15 or whatever. The sons of gods saw that the daughters of man were beautiful, blah 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 blah. But it seems like lately there's more and more people discussing the artificial manipulation of our you know, genome, because it just does not, you know.
Well, I would figure that it has more to do with, you know, they have a lot of junk DNA, and I would figure somewhere in that junk DNA they probably already found it and they're just not saying it. Is that?
Well, you know, and I spoke recently in Ohio at the Science and Supernatural Conference. I actually asked this question because the speaker just before me, by the way, are you familiar with Derek and Sharon Gilbert?
You know, the name's familiar, but I haven't.
Yeah, email me sometime and I'll send you their contact information. Derek, by the way, was a top 10 drive home radio personality for a long time, and now he does something else, but they have their own blog talk radio show. But Sharon's degrees are in molecular biology and genetics and like that. Well, she spoke right ahead of me, which, you know, here I am.
Great timing.
A theologian. Yeah, I mean, like the last person on earth that I wanted to follow was Sharon Gilbert, because she's brilliant in terms of her ability to be able to provide dissertation on, you know, how these issues, genetics and whatever, might not only be prophetic, but even if you don't believe in the Bible, even if you don't believe in prophecy and those sort of things, you have to see this as an assault on natural evolution. Natural evolution isn't providing either for what we're doing now, and so it could lead to, you know, a molecular biological nightmare. Well, anyway, I spoke after her. What was your question? I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, I think you're talking about the junk DNA.
Junk DNA. I asked the question after she spoke, because she had talked about, she puts this in you know, very legitimate technical and scientific language, where she's explaining how what she calls idling trucks and vectors and viruses and all this. She wrote a book some years ago, it was a novel actually, it was called The Armageddon Strain. And in that book, she talks about a biochip What the government does is the government or some operatives that are working behind the government, they put out a false, like a swine flu. They put out a variant of the swine flu to intentionally create a pandemic to bring the world to its knees so that then they can stand up with their cure and become the world savior, if you will, and empower themselves. A very interesting book. But in the book, she refers to a biochip that has the ability, if it's implanted in your body, it has the ability, like a retrovirus, to start going through your system and rewriting your genetics, literally changing you from human to something other than human. She's up talking about how, you know, some of these possibilities may be more real than fantasy now, because she wrote the book some years ago, but now we're actually looking at science possibilities, maybe even political realities that might lead to some fantastic conspiratorial scheme like that. And so I stood up after her, but during my lecture I asked her, you know, what is this junk DNA coded for? It appears to be coded, but we have no idea what for. Now, she's also a conservative like I am and a Christian like I am, and so she puts this in language where she refers to what happened, Shannon, when you were asking about Genesis 6, you know, and the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair and took them wives of all which they would. In those days there were giants in the earth, and also after that. But that's not just a book of Genesis story. There are literally dozens of ancient books, some of them very old Testament era books, like the book of Jasher, for instance. It's not in the biblical canon. It's not included. The Catholic Church did not include it in the canon, and neither did King James. But it's an ancient book, and it is referred to twice in the Old Testament, the book of Jasher. So it is contemporaneous with those writers. And in Jasher 4:18, it says that when these angels came down and they revealed the secrets of heaven to mankind, it says that right after that, here's what Jasher 4:18 says. It says, "And then the sons of men began to teach the blending of animals of one creature with another, therewith provoke the Lord," end quote. So you have this astonishing, very old, thousands of years old record, where some eyewitness is saying that when these powerful, intelligent beings came to the earth, whatever secrets they revealed to mankind, immediately afterward, men began literally crossing over species barriers. And then what happens is, when you look at all these ancient texts, the Baruch, the Genesis Apocryphon, even the works of Flavius Josephus, all these different records, the Dead Sea Scrolls contained testimony of this event. The Book of Enoch tells of these creatures. They came down in the days of Jared, according to Enoch, and blended humans with animals. And the Bible also makes it clear that the great flood occurred as a result of all flesh, it says, both man and beast, having been corrupted. So there is a very, very consistent record in all of these ancient texts. But then look at the iconography of Sumeria, the first known real civilization, and Egypt, and Greece. And look at all these images in their mythologies, where through these images they tell a story. And the story shows horses blended with humans, and various kind of animals, the chimera, blended with snake DNA. I mean, the images, I think, are a mute testimony that in their own way, the average people that were sitting there carving out these hieroglyphic images and whatever, they were not the gods. They were just the laborers. And in their own ways, they were creating a paper trail, a record, if you will, of something that at one time occurred, and it led to chaos. In fact, the Chimera, even in mythology, is a precursor of catastrophe. That's what it's the whole purpose behind its imagery is to depict that it is the forerunner. I'm trying to find the word. It's the foreshadower, if you will, of natural disasters. So it is a metaphor. It's imagery that is a metaphor, but also a historical record, in my opinion. Now, and I come on and I do a radio show like this. We talk for an hour. We talk for 2 hours. And the listeners out there, they may think I'm making giant leaps, you know, in my judgment. But I only have to remind that that in my mind, they don't have. Certainly, nobody has to agree with Tom Horn. I'm very much a radical. Probably a lot of people don't agree with me. I'm most certain of that. But just to know that I didn't reach these conclusions superficially, it was a great deal of time, a great deal of research, massive amounts of research that finally changed my own fundamentalist thinking and caused me to come to believe that I was actually looking at a record here, a historical record that is universal in scope, told from every culture, that an event occurred, species barriers were crossed over, and the purpose behind it was to allow the construction of a biological entity, a body, into which these things could extend themselves into our three-dimensional reality. That corresponds perfectly with the Bible, with the Greeks, with the Sumerians, with the Egyptian text, with the Chinese text, with all of the ancient records around the world. It fits perfectly with what their records say occurred. And, you know, we go to school, and at school we're told that this is mythology. But the longer you look at the ancient records, you really do come to believe that it probably wasn't mythology. It's just a crude record of something that occurred in the earliest times of our history, or even in what some people might refer to as prehistory.
Well, I want to just say that we've got Tom Horn with us, and he's written the book Forbidden Gates, and he's an internationally recognized lecturer and radio host and author. And with me, I've got Shannon as my co-host this evening. And we're talking about, and I'm going to ask you right now, what is transhumanism?
Yeah, you know, transhumanism really is it. When Tom Horn refers to transhumanism, I'm talking fairly modern, contemporary, cultural movement. Now, the truth is, the ideas behind transhumanism would go back to Gilgamesh, the legends of Gilgamesh from Sumeria, and the idea of transforming into a god. Certainly, a lot of it goes back to ancient Gnosticism, the idea that God created, but God was kind of an inferior being, and therefore the result of his creation is inferior and can be improved upon. You could go to the Enlightenment era, where science was elevated above the prophets and preachers.
Did we lose him? Are you there?
Interesting.
Tom, are you there?
Well, maybe we should.
Okay, try it again.
Nope. Already did.
It's working. Somebody hadn't turned that up. Tom, are you there?
Oh.
Okay. We're reconnecting here, so just give us a second here. I'm hoping he's... Take a second, and he might not know that we're off.
Right, he might just be talking on and on.
Okay.
That happens to everybody once in a while.
Yeah, so maybe...
Who out there with a cell phone hasn't talked about 2 or 3 minutes past when it disconnected at some point?
Okay, maybe
so
try that email there. And,
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and
play a song here?
Yeah, but let's bring up that little slider there to the left of Big Bird.
It says sign again. You can sign out. Sign me out.
Well, that's... I think it's a Microsoft conspiracy myself. I just always blame it on Bill Gates and his foundation to give polluted vaccines
okay, well,
to third world countries
okay.
and that kind
okay,
of a
no,
thing.
See,
you know?
Okay. Okay, so let me go ahead and see. We have you now, Tom.
Tom? Yes, I can barely hear you, but I'm here.
Okay. All right, so let's see if mine's down a little. Does that help at all? Okay, is that helping you any? Or did that? Do you hear me, Tom?
I can barely hear you.
Okay, we're messing with the monitor just a little bit on the sound here. And how's that now?
Well, I've got the volume all the way up on
okay,
my phone, and I'm holding it tight to my ear, and I can barely hear you.
Okay, try that. How's that any better? Okay, now why would we have this down? Okay, and now how's that? Do you hear me any better now?
I can hear you well enough, just
okay.
I've got, yeah.
Okay, all right. Sorry for the interruption there, but every once in a while that happens.
Stuff happens.
And when you're in a community radio station, sometimes the people don't turn off some things that when we went to try to use the phones earlier, they weren't working. So
you know who you are.
Oh, but are you coming for them?
So we were back. We were talking about what transhumanism is.
Yeah. Well, and I was saying that. You know, so all of the above, its relations to history, but that when I'm doing lectures, when I'm talking about transhumanism, what I'm talking about is a contemporary movement. It's an international movement. It's intellectual. It's fast-growing, a cultural movement known as transhumanism, and this is a belief system that is being espoused by. I mean, these people are not the fringe. That's what people should understand. We're talking about national leaders, government think tanks, academics, as well as a swelling number of the general population who actually envision the use of genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, and nanotechnology, what we call GRIN technologies, though I should tell you that the advances in these fields of science are happening so quickly that even the term GRIN will be outdated within the next 12 months, because now, you know, we're adding new fields of synthetic biology, nanotechnology, neuropharmacology, but it's all related to the genetic sciences. And what transhumanists believe is that these are the tools that we no longer need to wait on the daunting task of natural evolution, but now we have the tools that we can use to radically redesign our minds, our memories, our physiology, our offspring through germline engineering, even perhaps what Professor Joel Guru in his best-selling book, Radical Evolution, which I highly recommend, what he claims, we're going to literally redesign our very souls, our spirits. And the bottom line is that this technological, cultural, even metaphysical shift is already underway. This is not it's futuristic in some sense, but it is not futuristic in that it has not already started. It's already begun, and it unapologetically forecasts a future that's going to be dominated by a new species of unrecognizably superior humans. And what your listeners should understand is that the applications to make that dream a reality are already under study. They're already being funded by thousands of government and private research facilities around the world. And this is what we do in the book, Forbidden Gates. That's the new book. Now, here's the long title, Forbidden Gates, and here's the subtitle, How Genetics, Robotics, Artificial Intelligence, Synthetic Biology, Nanotechnology, and Human Enhancement Herald the Dawn of Techno-Dimensional Spiritual Warfare, end quote. Long title, huh? that's why we just refer to it as Forbidden Gates. But that's what this book is about. We are providing the documentation, government documents, government studies that are being funded and paid for by taxpayers that are actually providing the guidelines, if you will, for setting public policy for the human enhancement revolution, which most of these government reports, they themselves point to the year 2012. So we're only talking about 24 months from now, in which they believe that serious rollout is going to begin. Human enhancement, cybernetic enhancement, even what's being done at the embryonic level right now, where in thousands of laboratories around the world, we're already blending humans with animals at the embryonic level for the purposes of extracting stem cells for research, that it's going to move to the next step. It already has, according to what I understand, it already has in SAP budgets, black budgets, DARPA, who have been investing billions of dollars for more than 20 years, actually, into super soldier technology. In fact, the DARPA 2011 presidential budget that's already gone to the Hill provides millions of dollars for editing soldiers' DNA, for creating biodesign, immortal genes. So the technology, it's not a matter of if or even when. It's a matter of it's already happening right now. And now the government has a need to begin to slowly educate the public towards the ramifications of what is coming. And it's interesting that when you look at the media, you were mentioning earlier some of the television shows now like Fringe and Gattaca and all these other television shows and movies that are coming out that have transhumanist themes around them, even games that kids are playing. Well, in history, we always see where media kind of imagines the future before the public in general is even aware of it. I mean, go back when I was a kid and look at, Buck Rogers and the 21st century, you know, or look at Dick Tracy with his gigantic wristwatch in which he can talk to somebody and see their picture, and then just pull out your cell phone now and look at how your cell phone is quantitatively more powerful than the first computers, laptop computers, and even personal computers mm-hmm. that were created by IBM, how that the cell phone that you hold in your hand now has tremendous power in excess of the computers that we were using only 15 years ago. Well, when you know that to be true, then imagine that now, if we're reading Reuters news articles, a Reuters news article that came out a few months ago called Scientists Want Debate on Animals with Human Genes. And this was a Reuters article in which they were interviewing scientists in Britain who 24 months ago, maybe 30 months ago now, had been involved in the embryology discussions. I don't know if you remember those discussions, but in Britain there was what was called the embryology discussions, or public debates. And these debates happened because scientists wanted public funding, tax dollars, to be able to participate in scientific investigation into merging humans with animals for a variety of health-related scientific studies. And but because it was going to include creating at least embryos and maybe more than embryos, maybe Splice. Have you seen the movie Splice?
No, I haven't.
Well, I haven't either, but I've seen the screeners for it, and I've done radio shows with, like, Steve Quayle, people who have seen it. And bottom line is it's a half human, half animal, and what happens in the whole movie. But if somebody wants to go to Google and type in the Reuters title I just gave you, Scientists Want Debate on Animals with Human Genes, they can read the article for themselves right out of Britain, right out of the embryology discussions. It was also published in the BBC, where these scientists are admitting now that they are involved in experiments with, for instance, dogs that have human hands and feet.
Oh.
other kinds of experiments like that. And what they want to know is the public okay with it? And they admit in the article that they are comfortable now, that the scientific community that's involved in this kind of research are completely comfortable with up to 50-50 human-animal integration. And they want to know, you know, how comfortable is the public with it, because they want to solicit for more tax dollars, public funds, to fund their research. And they also admit in this article that they're aware that there are already Dr. Moreau wannabes who already are pushing the envelope, raising these kind of creatures to full maturity for the purposes of scientific experimentation. Well, of course, if you read the book Forbidden Gates, which we just finished, and the book, we made it as easy as we possibly could for anybody to read. It's about 320 pages, so it's not going to be a really long read. But we provide photocopies from, for instance, DARPA's budget for super soldier technology this year, not 10 years ago, this year, 2011, in which they want to create what Wired Magazine, who has published some of my work in the past, they received a leaked document from the Pentagon. Who leaked it from the Pentagon to them, I don't know. But they received a leaked document that had to do with the Jasons, which is the highest think tank in the Pentagon, And their concern over transhuman, brain-modified enemies and other governments, such as China or Russia, getting ahead of the United States in the development of enhanced soldiers on the battleground. And the name of the article, if somebody wants to Google it and read it, was Jason's Fear Brain-Modified Foes. So you can Google that and you can read the article for yourself based on a leaked document.
It might even be true.
We went to DARPA. We went to Professor Guru's evolution, and we got the actual budgets, and we photocopied some of the pages. And
Tom, can I ask you? You're talking about a preponderance of evidence that you're having to present. Are you experiencing a lot of resistance from people to even believe that this is happening?
No. You know, I'm actually not, Shannon. I'm glad you asked that question. I guess I'm doing it just because some of the information is so spectacular, in some ways so unnerving, that many taxpayers...
Oh, Tom, you're so polite. Well, it sounds like it's just the worst idea. Okay, what I hear in your book title is like, you know, some of the obvious stuff, this is a really poor idea, all these things together. And if you look at what has happened with transgenic crops and the disaster that can never be undone, you know, the organic farms that have just been, you know, destroyed and now you don't know where it is, it just seems like from a certain standpoint that's not particularly spiritual. And that's the second part I guess I see in your title. And I'd like to hear kind of like a separate discussion of that. But I'm wondering, you know, are we really finding that more than 50% of the people are liking this idea, are going along with the implied, oh, this is a good thing, because they say it's spectacular, like you just did, but they mean it in a different way. And what you seem to be saying, I was cracking up at one of your interviews where your comment was, well, we want a million years of evolution right now. Why wait for a million years? Let's have it all today. Woo! And I laughed. And I thought, yeah, you know, there's a real clarity to what you're saying. This is crazy. Is that a minority view? That side of it, not the spiritual side, but I mean, just the obvious. I mean, like Bob Lazar has described underneath Area 51. Have you? Can you take that part of it? And
you know, and by the way, I did some research with Bob Lazar and what's his name, you know, out of Las Vegas that first broke the story with Bob Lazar. I did
John Lear.
Research into that years ago. Stan Deo is a friend of mine, as is also this is terrible, but you know the guy that
Steve Quayle?
No, the guy that broke the Roswell story.
We've interviewed Bob. We've interviewed Stan Deo, interviewed John Lear. And so, you know, what's your take on just if you had to, because of the people behind this are probably less spiritually oriented and more scientific oriented, what's your science, super tough argument about why this is are you saying more than just the spiritual side? As the, you know, the negative effects? Because that's what I'm...
I would say that my approach is, first of all, I'm very devout to my background, meaning that I am a very conservative. Now, I don't even like the term fundamentalist because it gets implied to the extreme right and politics and all that, and that's not what I am, and I'm not a dominionist. In fact, I'm one of the loudest Christian voices out there against dominionism, but I was a pastor for 25 years, and I have great concern for people of faith. And what I have found, Shannon and Melody, what I have found is that most people out there, regardless of their faith, regardless of their ethnicity, regardless of their upbringing, most people are just, they're very basic, they're good people, they want to get along, they don't have an interest in killing their neighbor or stealing from them or anything else, you know. And most of those people simply are not aware. They're just not aware. They live their lives every day, they work, they kind of live in the matrix. And they are not aware of what is unfolding right now beneath their feet. And when I go to these various conferences or I do television shows or radio shows, this is why it is important to me to use exact documentation to only point to, for instance, Case Law School in Cleveland. When I spoke in Ohio 2 weeks ago, I made them know, hey, in your state, Case Law School, 2006, they received almost $1 million from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for a 24-month study that was headed by Professor Max Mellman for the purpose of establishing the guidelines that will actually be used for setting public policy surrounding human enhancement as the next step in human evolution. I actually even took the press release from Case Law School with me and showed it to them, made sure it was on camera, so they would be able to see it to know that, you know, Tom Horn's not citing scurrious sources. I'm not quoting, you know, tabloid magazines out of the local grocery store. It's really important to me that people understand that when I quote the press release from Case Law School, when I refer to the House Foreign Affairs Government Committee hearings out of California last year talking about the threat that is posed by enhanced humans as being potentially far greater threat of terrorism than what happened with the Al-Qaeda in September 11, 2001, if you buy the whole Al-Qaeda story, that the transhumanist threat is much worse. When I quote the press releases from the Birkbeck Law School, the largest crime scene investigator school probably in the nation, certainly out of the UK, out of Britain, in which they're saying that they're going to have future classes for crime scene analysis to be able to understand profiling and forensics as it relates to a human non-human, something that is part human and part animal, and how that everything we know about profiling and forensics will be altered. When I quote the new U.S. National Science Foundation report, Ethics of Human Enhancement, 25 Questions and Answers, it only came out a few months ago, and when I put out a press release that was also picked up by Wired Magazine and many others and published, saying, open letter on bioethics and human enhancement, or I can't even remember what the title was. Now, open letter to Christian leaders on bioethics and the future of man. I think that was what the title was. But I put that out just a few weeks ago, and the co-author of the new U.S. National Science Foundation report, Patrick Lynn, attacked me on the largest online transhumanist think tank, the IEET, the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies, the founder of which is James Hughes, whose radio show I've done, and he's also done mine, in which we've had public debates on the ethics of transhumanism. But he attacked me because he did not want me saying that religious people ought to get involved with this conversation while there is time. Well, the answer, Shannon, is I'm not one of these kind of a guys that's, you know, I get up on a stump and I'm an old-fashioned preacher, and now I'm getting ready to assign everybody to hell. That's not my approach on this. I would say that I'm very devout to my religious beliefs, but it's easy for me to do anybody's show. I go on coast to coast. I talk with George Norrie. I talk with anybody. I don't care who I'm talking to. I'm trying to speak really to the issue, and what I'm saying is, regardless of your world view, the world had better pay attention to what is happening now. The biotechnological and genetics revolution has already given birth to what is quietly unfolding in laboratories around the world. Even Leon Cass, who was the chairman for the President's Council on Bioethics, wrote his book on this after he stepped down during the Bush administration after fulfilling his term on the President's Council on Bioethics, and after he was able to review material that me and you never see, the public never sees. He saw the testimony, if you will, even from experts operating within black budgets and talking about where transhumanism is going to take us and biotechnology is going to take us. He resigned that seat, and he wrote a carefully worded book in which he is saying that in laboratories around the world, the redefinition of humankind is being written, and it is time right now to pay attention. Well, that's all I'm saying. I'm saying to the world, it's time to pay attention, because we are racing forward now with genetically modified crops, which you brought up, Shannon, transgenic animal-human embryos, because we believe that these new creations are somehow going to open the door to a better evolution of our species. And so we're doing experiments. Moth genes.
Okay, that's why do you say that? I mean, your surrounding context is telling you that we believe that in at least in like a majority sense, but in my context, I would say probably of the vast majority of people I know do not trust that. In fact, you know, what I've been reading on some of the connected links to your sites as well is that, you know, one of the big themes is a mistrust of scientists. You mentioned the film Splice, which also deals heavily with the distrust that people have of scientists, I guess kind of because of Dr. Moreau and other things that are in her. But so, I mean, is that true? What are the statistics, since you're so well versed in this and you have talked to people about it all over the place, am I in out of date, out of the context that's not in touch with your reality as far as thinking, yeah, the majority of people really do think this is a good idea and believe it'll
help? No. What I'm saying is the majority of people are not even involved in the discussion. As people become aware of what is going on, they're really turned off by it. The truth is, I don't think that the majority of people would be willing to go along with the transhumanist scheme, if you will, but the majority are not paying attention. In other words, look at all of the government documents, including what I've already referred to, the new U.S. National Science Foundation report, other reports that we quote in our book, Forbidden Gates. And by the way,
what's your website and your other books you've written too?
Yeah, for the listener, because several, I don't know, six or eight of the most important government funded documents that we refer to in the book Forbidden Gates are available for free. You can go to Forbidden Gate, singular, not plural, ForbiddenGate.com, and look in the both in the left and right columns as you pull down on that page, and we're going to be posting some more documents that have only now become available to us. But you can go and you can download these reports. You can read them for yourself. Some of them are very large. Some of them are 500 pages. They're as big as a book. But these are government, the NBIC report, for instance, by the U.S. government, in which they really do envision the future as the fulfillment of the transhuman dream. But, Shannon, what I'm finding out is exactly what you just said. When I go places and speak, first of all, people are shocked. They can't even believe that this is actually happening because it's unfolding very quickly. You know, we are living in an exponential age now. Technology is advancing rapidly. And many of these futurists, like Ray Kurzweil, Kurzweil is right on. His Age of Spiritual Machines and much of what he talks about, he is right on. He's a singularitarian. He believes that we are very near. It's difficult to kind of define, you know, when singularity will happen. Him, Hugo de Garis, people like that believe that we're moving toward the singularity, a moment in which artificial intelligence is going to come online, and in a moment's time, we're going to have massively powerful, godlike synthetic intelligence. Some of them see it as far as 20 years down the road from now. Others believe it could happen in any second. Others believe 5 to 10 years from now. And these are going to be game changers, if you will.
Okay, Tom, let me go ahead and say this is K-H-E-N-L-P.
Well, sorry, I had to cough. Okay. What were you saying?
I was going
to
say this is K-H-E-N-L-P, Salida. And again, the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. But I want to add that, you know, you're adding some pretty good documentation to say that there's more than one viewpoint here. And it's particularly when it comes to, backing up of the information that you're presenting for this book that you've written. And my question is when they're throwing this kind of technology at us, and yet what I see going on around us is kind of an end game, do you think possibly that they've already planned on replacing humans?
Well, look, I mean, I wrote the book, Apollyon Rising 2012, like the biggest, best-selling conspiracy book ever written. but I also try to be balanced. And, like Alex Jones, people like that, they've also produced books and also DVDs that have to do with an endgame scenario that also does include a eugenics approach. In other words, if Hitler was alive today, he would finally have the science right to be able to produce his Übermensch, his superior race, and he could wipe out everybody else. I personally do not believe that we are on the cusp, at least, of that vision unfolding before us within the next decade. What I believe is more subtle. I believe that we are certainly on the verge. Within the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to start seeing serious human enhancement rollout. We're already seeing it in gene doping. The Olympics this year, there were several news stories about some of the Olympians and how they were able to perform, and they know that they probably were, participants in some kind of genetics doping. But genetics doping or gene doping is not like, you know, other kinds of drugs, illicit drugs that you can use that very easily turn up in your bloodstream and therefore are detected because they're natural. They're genes. They're genetics. The fact that they would appear in your blood might not mean anything. And so we're already seeing these kind of issues that are arising, but it is very much in its embryonic stage. Whether the government is right, the MBIC report that people can download at ForbiddenGate.com is correct, or whether some of the other reports, U.S. National Science Foundation report, Ethics of Human Enhancement, 25 Questions and Answers, in which Patrick Lynn tried to take me to task for asking the Christians to get involved in this discussion, whether his report is correct, where he talks about people trying to become aquatic animals and living underwater and some of the weirdness that's inside that taxpayer-funded report, whether that's correct. All I can tell you is that we certainly now are entering into these uncharted waters.
Okay, now, Tom, when I brought up that question, it's pretty obvious that the GMO crops have already overtaken our natural crops. So would it not be logical that if they start messing with this kind of transhumanism, I'm not sure if I'm saying the words correctly on between transgenics, transhumanism, if they would end up easily replacing humans, because, again, how are you going to control it?
Well, what I'm saying, Melody, mm-hmm. I'm not a I'm not dogmatic. I'm not an absolutist. In other words, I don't say that I, Tom Horn, have a particular vision about exactly how this is going to happen. Here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why I'm not. Being a pastor and being an executive in the largest evangelical institution in the world for 30 years, I saw a lot of prophets come and go. I saw a lot of people come through who made predictions. And their predictions usually did not pan out the way that they thought they were going to. What I'm saying is people need to pay attention to, first of all, the genetics revolution, the side of this fact that we're now fusing moth genes with potatoes, that pigs are being fused with human growth genes, that fish are being implanted with cattle growth genes, that tomatoes are being bred with flounders. That's what I'm saying. Pay attention to the fact that we are doing something that neither divine creation nor evolution. So regardless of your worldview, if you're a religious person or a Darwinist, what we're doing now was not allowed for, neither by creation nor by evolution, and therefore it is outside of any paradigm that we understand. And so it could certainly become a molecular biological issue. Now, you mentioned genetically modified crops. What do we know about genetically modified crops? Well, most of what we know about genetically modified crops is not good. We document in the book Forbidden Gates the work by Arpad Pusztai, which was repeat verified by Arina Ermakova and also other foundations that came behind them even. And Greenpeace's lawsuits against Monsanto, the giant corporation, for more than a decade, to actually try to cover up the findings in that research that showed that test rats, mice, who were fed the genetically modified potatoes and various other kinds of products, died at half-life, developed tumors. Their offspring developed all kinds of health-related issues. Mm-hmm. In test fields in Europe, where genetically modified crops have been raised, people who live downwind have started developing above normal respiratory issues. And yet, you turn around and you look at the FDA, and the FDA appears to be allowing the producers of those products to do their own testing, and then they accept the reports of the corporations at face value that the biotech creations are safe. And then it gets worse when you start looking at the current administration in the United States and how they're bringing in people who have long histories with these monster corporations, including Monsanto, and they're making these people who are supposed to be the watchovers over the FDA and health-related issues. So I certainly I have no problem with anybody who sees reasons to believe that there could be a cause to believe that there is a conspiracy. And I also would take it even a step further. I know that operating within our own government, there are occultists, outright devil-worshipping occultists. And they certainly have reasons to want to be able to control and manipulate, whether it is eugenics or whatever other power that they might possess to be able to control. Did you see, by the way, Melody and Shannon, did you see the, it just came out about, I think, 3 weeks ago now, the Global Governance 2025 at a Critical Juncture report that was published by the U.S. National Intelligence Agency working with the European Institute of Security Studies. Did you see that?
Yes, we have.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're aware. And for your listeners, they could go to ForbiddenGate.com. They can download that report themselves. It's just published in September. And it also talks about biotechnology. Look, in the end, what I hope is that we don't learn what I call the Brundle fly lesson. And if you look at that old movie, The Fly, there was this scientist by the name of Seth Brundle who had been conducting teleportation experiments, and he accidentally has his DNA combined with a housefly during one of the teleportation experiments, and right after, he starts becoming the transhumanist dream come true. He's powerful, he's strong, lightning quick, but then not long after that, he starts becoming something unexpected, a hideous monster. He's got to be destroyed. Jeff Goldblum, who played played Brundle in that film, he also stars as Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park, who subscribes to the chaos theory. And as he's being chased down the road by a giant, man-eating Tyrannosaurus Rex, he wants to know who in the hell thought this was a good idea. So what I'm saying is, my point about this is to make the public aware of what is happening in the genetic sciences, in the biotech revolution.
Now, how are you? You say you keep talking to the religious sector. How are they dealing with this? Is anybody stepping up to back you up?
What I would say is that every place I speak, the laity, the average person on the street, they're concerned because of the way I approach this, in that I only use legitimate documents, news stories, reputable news stories, government documents, that sort of thing. They quickly are converted in their thinking.
Okay, but how about the religious organization?
Well, the institution is so occultic. The truth is, part of the reason why I left the institution is it has become so corrupt. Not to say that there aren't some very good people in the institution, because there are, but year after year they're really becoming a minority. And frankly, I don't know how they even function.
You're not the first one I've heard state this sort of thing either.
What's that?
You're not the first person, clergy, that I've heard state this sort of thing either. I mean, there obviously seems to be kind of across the board in some form or fashion a manner of corruption.
And what I would say, Melody and Shannon, because I don't know, I don't know your worldview or your belief systems or anything else, what I would tell you is that inside Christianity, at the macro level, what we know is that the true body of Christ is not the institution. The true body of Christ are those who are truly born again, who truly are that mystical institution, if you will. In human governments, people get their hands in things, and really it becomes a power structure. People jockey for position. And if you look at the life of Jesus Christ, he walked away. Every time they wanted to make him a king, give him a position, make him the hierarchy, whatever, the record of the Bible is he just moved through the crowd very quickly, and it says because he knew what was in the hearts of men. He rejected it completely. He didn't want it. Furthermore, and this will really make some of the religious people perhaps listening to this show mad, note that he never went to church. He did not participate in the Sunday services, folks. He didn't. He wouldn't have no part in it. And here's what's further amazing about Jesus Christ. The strongest language that he ever used, now I would not say that it was profanity, but it most definitely was considered by the religious hierarchy to be blasphemy. The strongest language Jesus ever used was against the leaders of the institution.
Right.
Look at Jesus and notice how, I don't care if it's a prostitute that the leaders of the institution are trying to set up, using her as a tool to get her killed or not get her killed, because what they're really trying to do is just set Jesus up. Whether it's her or whatever, notice his compassion towards those people. Okay. Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Jesus was, and if you wanted to find him, you'd go to the wrong side of town.
Okay, now I'm talking to Tom Horn, and he's written the book Forbidden Gates, and we've gotten a little. He's discussing a little bit of his changing from the. I mean, you're no longer particularly active in a congregation. Is that what you're saying? And that you're really out there trying to make people aware of the spiritual aspect that has been revealed or connected with the transhumanist movement. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's two different things.
Okay.
I was a pastor for 25 years. For more than 30 years, I was in the largest evangelical institution in the world. I held executive level positions. For 3 years, I worked with a group of 45 people in exorcism. So I have qualifications to write this book from the spiritual side, if you will. And I would want people to know that not for one moment have I ever denied or turned my back on my faith in Jesus Christ.
Right now, and that's right. And you, I think you made that pretty clear in what you're stating. It was the institution that you had a problem with.
Yeah, I had a real problem. Well, and part of that was because I sit on boards. There's an illustration in this book, Forbidden Gates,
mm-hmm.
in which I talk about a woman. I don't use her name, but I was sitting on a board. I was the executive director of that board, and this was the board that handled the largest sums of money. We were the largest department in that state, and I was there that day when we approved the purchase, for instance, of homes. The institution owned a bunch of land. I'm not going to name it. A bunch of land where their corporate headquarters was, and there was also, it must have been 50 or 60 homes on this property. And the institution thought that they had a commercial investor who was interested in paying more than land value at that time for these properties so they could turn it into a retirement facility. So the institution put the word out through the communities, through that community, that they were interested in buying anybody's property. Now, here's what you have to understand is behind the scenes, their motivation was money. It had nothing to do with anything, but they wanted to make money, and so they put out the word through their newsletters and whatever's into the community. And there was, I don't know, six or eight people that lived in the community who said, "Sure, we would be willing to sell you our land." The institution then went and negotiated an agreement with these different people. Well, one of the people who lived there was a dear friend of mine and my wife. At that time, I was the executive director of the largest financial branch of the institution in the state. My wife was, well, I won't tell you what her position was, but she also was a state director. This woman was an elderly woman. She had dedicated probably 20 years of her life with not a dime, not a penny paid to her in volunteer work for the institution. And the state superintendent, the top dog in the district, went to her home, made a deal with her on her property because he knew they were going to make a lot more money than what she was willing to sell it to them for, and made the deal. Well, I was sitting in the room. I'm the executive director. I write everything for that department in this district. And when the superintendent came in and he said, "Here's another property that wants to be sold, and here's what she's agreed to sell it to us for." Well, anyway, I'll cut the story short. But the story is told actually in the book Forbidden Gates as part of the reason why I finally left the institution. They agreed to purchase her property. Well, they agreed to purchase six other properties at the same time. And by the way, this is a legal issue. When you are a non-profit organization And you, this was a policy board. This was not a committee that makes recommendations. This was a policy board. We had authority within the institution to make decisions with regard to the use of dollars that are donated by donors throughout the state. And we agreed to purchase these properties. Well, guess what? Every one of the properties was represented by younger persons who couldn't be victimized, who knew their legal rights. Theirs were within 5 weeks. Every property but this old woman was closed, escrow. Hers just sat there and lingered and lingered and lingered and lingered. And this old woman was dying. She finally wound up in a care home. We're talking now a year down the road. They still haven't given her a dime or even talked to her. And because she's friends with my wife, she asked my wife, can you please check in with the district? Because now she's having serious health issues and she needs money to pay her bills. Will you check in with the district to find out when they're going to pay me for my property? My wife calls the secretary for the state superintendent and says, I'm talking with XYZ, and she's asked me if I could check in. And here's what she was told. She's going to die, and when she dies, we're going to inherit the property anyway. And therefore, we've decided just not to pay her until she's dead. I'm not making this up.
No, I mean, I could see where we could just get into a whole program on that sort of thing going on, because I've interviewed Janet Phelan and others that have gotten into these estate issues, and then you have the crossover of the organizations that have these ethic issues that you were just talking about.
It's actually a bullet point among six or seven at the get rich type seminars too. You know, I used to work in title search, and what happens is you find out in small counties especially who's doing things like what you're talking about. You know, there's companies that, you know, anywhere from, you know, hospitals, asphalt companies, sporting goods retailers, they have extra money. They know someone whose property's sitting there, haven't paid taxes on it. They go in, they pay the back taxes. The people eventually forfeit the property to them, you know. And they do. And a lot of it's old people who just don't remember to do it. So,
well, except in this case, you have on my part, the reason I left, you have the whole ethics issue. But secondly, I've also been contacted by federal investigators on this issue. They're not just looking at the state in which this happened. They're looking at the actual national headquarters and other misappropriations, which I can't. That's why I'm being very careful about how I'm picking my words, because they've actually already contacted me about potentially being a witness to what happened. And the reason why I haven't gone out and named names, if you will, you know, and take no prisoners, is because I agreed to not say certain things, because this is under criminal investigation right now, because we're talking about the misappropriate. We're talking about basically the a mistrust issue with the public at large for a nonprofit organization. And they are very much at risk, at least the state level, maybe even at the national level. And there's some stuff going on at the national level that's 100 times more shocking in the way they have misused particular kinds of retirement investments and things like that. So I'm not going to say any more about it than that.
Right.
But so this is an ongoing investigation. That's why I'm not saying much about it. But at some point, the public is going to understand why, from my position, I hit a point where I said, I can no longer be connected with this whatsoever, period. And it had nothing to do with my faith in Christ. It had nothing to do with my Christianity. It had everything in the world to do with corruption within the institution. But this is what happens, when people get involved in religious institutions, it certainly can, often does, lead to corruption.
So, well, I can definitely see what, just talking about the transhumanism aspect and the gene, them messing with the different species. You're talking about another ethics issue. You're talking about a whole, I mean, it's across the board. We're finding it in just about every direction we turn. Ethics, ethics, ethics. And now you're talking about crossing species. And it's fascinating, but I can imagine the jealousy and the patents and all the different aspects that are tied to this, that, you know, you could have so many different, I can't even describe what I'm trying to say here.
It's true. I mean, look, the reason for writing the book Forbidden Gates is because we do have an interest in the spiritual side of what this means. And it isn't just Tom and Nita Horn who is saying, hey, you know what, we were there, we worked in exorcism, we understand some of these spiritual... It's not just that. The transhumanists are saying this too. Within the transhumanist camps, writers like Nick Bostrom talking about blending ourselves with animal genetics and how this is going to open new modes of perception. But in this kind of transhumanist research, they believe that they may be able to make contact with the unknown. Terence McKenna, the scientist who was the originator of novelty theory and time wave theory, he experimented with drugs like DMT and things like that, and he would go on these mind, shaman-like mind experiments in which he would make contact with what he thought was extraterrestrials or whatever, what Christians might think of as demons, or what people, Eric von Daniken might think of as ancient astronauts. He put himself in contact with these entities, but he also believed that in the somewhat near future, through genetic enhancement, we would be able to alter our brains in such a way that we would no longer need to use psychoactive drugs to put ourselves in contact with the spirit world. We'd be able to alter our brains in such a way that we could create kind of a stable pathway, a more permanent pathway to contact with the spirit world. Well, go to nickbostrom.com. You know, read his transhumanist values. And how through combining ourselves with animal genetics, there is the potential to also develop within proto-humans, humans 2.0, techno-sapiens, you know, all these cool phrases that transhumanists use regarding our future selves. And those who go to ForbiddenGate.com and download some of the government reports are going to read the same language about how there is this potential to become kind of a hive mind, a universal mind, that not only could be in contact one with each other. Think about, in other words, think about the Internet. What is the Internet? And look at how the Internet is interconnected. All these websites, what the government in its MBIC government report envisions is that the human mind itself will become like that. All these brains all around the world, like a giant hive mind, all cybernetically connected with one another. Well, it does not escape many of the philosophers and the writers and the thinkers within transhumanism that this might have supernatural aspects. So you go to Arizona State University and look at the SOFIA project, which is an outgrowth of the Templeton Foundation's funding of lectures at ASU on transhumanism and the future of democracy and religion. Transhumanism and religion. How transhumanism will affect religion. And see at ASU where they have the Sophia Project, which is named after the Greek goddess of wisdom. And they imagine that through what we are doing now, it holds the potential, if you will, for making contact with this other reality, this other world. And they actually name at ASU, if you click on the Sophia Project, they name the entities that they imagine confirming contact with, angels, God, demons, the spirits of dead humans. So, in other words, what we would think of as the supernatural realm. And so this interests me because, you know, as a theist and as a Christian and with my background as a pastor and in theology, and I'm also an eschatologist, I believe in prophecy, I just can't imagine. Hang on. I apologize. I've actually, by the way, Melody and Shannon, I've done pretty good tonight, not
no,
coughing.
You have.
Last
you have
night
done great.
It was just a carnival of coughing.
Well, while you're at it, how far along do you think they are into this super soldier? I've watched some of the maybe military channel or some science channel or whatever on TV, and they seem to be focusing in this area. Where would you think that is right now, and where do you think, how far down the line do you think it's going to go before, you know, we're utilizing this sort of soldier?
Well, that was actually, if anybody wants to go to ForbiddenGate.com, and on, I don't know if it's the left or right side, but there's a link there to the Wired Magazine article, Jason's Fear Brain Modified Foes. They can go in and read the article, and that will give them an immediate kind of insight into where the highest think tank inside the U.S. Pentagon believes this technology already is. In our book, Forbidden Gates, we provide photocopies of this year's 2011 DARPA presidential budget, in which there's millions of dollars set aside for editing soldiers' DNA, for the creation of biodesign, for the Batman project, the biochronicity project, Batman and Robin, the robustness project, in which they are actually building upon what had I don't know if you saw the lecture that I gave at Ohio. It's actually online now.
It went online
as of yesterday. Did you see that?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, then I don't need to repeat what I was saying about Admiral John Poindexter about a decade ago and what was happening in DARPA at that time.
The audience didn't read it, though.
What's that?
I said the audience didn't get to watch it, though, so if it's real, you know, pertinent to what you're talking about, it might be interesting for them, so...
Yeah, the issue was, and I think from memory, I was trying to remember actually in Ohio. So if somebody wants to go to Google or Wikipedia or whatever to check my math on this, I think this was in 2002. That's what I'm remembering. It might have been 2003. Admiral John Poindexter, at that time, he was the director of DARPA's Information Awareness Office, and there was a whole series of political issues, a big fight that developed on the Hill, and he wound up losing his job. But what was more important was during those issues, the Senate Appropriations Committee went in and they started taking a deeper look into how money was flowing through DARPA. And what the staffers found there was, well, it was amazing. Literally, super soldiers who were being defined by DARPA's, both the budget and also the addendum information, as being unstoppable. These were soldiers who could not be stopped. This was 10 years ago. Enhanced warriors who had superhuman physical, physiological, cognitive abilities, and they could communicate by thought alone. Well, this was already on the drawing board over a decade ago, or about a decade ago.
Well,
And so what happened was the Senate Appropriations Committee, they started zeroing out anything they could find in DARPA, which was multiple entries, that sounded like it was describing the creation of a master race of superhumans. The points that I was making at Ohio, where I was actually quoting research that had been done by Professor Joel Garou, who was, at that time, he was actually an investigative reporter for the Washington Post. He's also an attorney. He wrote the book Radical Evolution, which I highly recommend. And he actually went to DARPA. They allowed him to come inside during his investigation because it's one of those situations in which it's much better, you know, sometimes to bring somebody in and give them a hug than it is to try to avoid them if they're really good at what they do, because otherwise your fear then is they're going to cast you in a negative light. So they brought him in and they, you know, provided some information but not much. Ultimately, the only thing he found out, and this was after over a year of investigative research, was that nothing had been stopped whatsoever. The Senate Appropriation Committee had zeroed out all these budget lines in DARPA for the creation of super soldiers, and all DARPA did was turn around and put new language around it so that the Senate Appropriations Committee wouldn't even realize what they were looking at when they were looking at it. And keep in mind, these are congressionally reviewed budgets. These don't have anything to do with SAPs. These don't have anything to do with waived budgets, in which you've got black budgets, dark budgets, in which money is flowing into stuff that's not ever even going before the Senate Appropriations Committee, which is certainly a staple of the way that we conduct business. And I can even imagine there are times when that's important to be able to function in that way. Okay, I'm sorry, but...
Okay, well, this is just a sidestep going back to something that was brought up a little bit earlier when you were talking about working somewhat with Bob Lazar. In what capacity was that?
Hang on, what did you say?
In what capacity would you have been working with Bob Lazar? What was that all about?
No, I didn't work with Bob Lazar. What I was saying was... Stan Deo is a friend of mine.
Okay.
As is Stanton Friedman. And earlier, I couldn't remember. It's terrible. But I couldn't recall Friedman's name. That's horrible. I certainly hope he never finds that out. and there had been some hoopla, if you will, around Bob Lazar and his claims. And was there anything? Was it real? Well, on the one hand, I had Stan, and who's the news reporter out of Las Vegas? I can't remember his name, but he's the guy that really broke the story with Lazar.
Unless you're talking about the guy that was on Coast to Coast, but I'm not up on that particular aspect.
This is terrible. I tell you what, not only am I an old preacher, I'm becoming a forgetful preacher. But anyway... If anybody goes to Google and they type in Bob Lazar, they're going to find this Las Vegas news reporter. He's the guy that's really at an arm's length with Lazar. Well, what had happened was there was some news stories a few years ago, and I also own Raiders News Network. Raiders News Network is a very well-visited news site. We get literally millions and millions of visits per year over there. Well, there was a story that came up, and frankly, right now, I can't even recall what it was, but it related to Bob Lazar. So I contacted the Las Vegas news reporter who had originally done all this reporting with Bob Lazar, and I set up going out to the desert where Bob lives now. He's out there, you know, building this, whatever it is, this rocket-powered car or something. And I set up going there to interview him, to talk about his Area 51 claims. And but in the meantime, Stanton Friedman and Stan Deo are both close friends of mine. So I contacted them because I knew that Stanton had done some investigative commentary mm-hmm. on Bob Lazar in the past. And so I contacted him. What do you make of Bob Lazar? Well, he didn't have a very high opinion. He had done research on his credentials, the statements that Bob Lazar had made, what his credentials were, that, you know, at Area 51. And Friedman thought that Bob Lazar was the biggest phony on earth. So then I contacted Stan and I asked him what he thought about it, and I wrote a couple of editorials at the time that were published by Raiders News Network and some others, and I can't quite remember what Stan said. But so I published those reports, but what I had not known was that even earlier than that, now we're going back, you know, a decade and a half ago, there had been some kind of issue with Friedman and Stan Deo.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to know what this was about, and that was two or three more articles that was published by Raiders News Network. And what I found out was Friedman had great respect for Deo and vice versa. In fact, Friedman told me directly that Deo was a very smart guy, and he had no questions whatsoever about his qualifications on some of the research that was being done into anti-gravity devices. And it had to do with something else that was never resolved, and frankly, I think that Deo and Friedman I think they get along now, and I don't think it was a problem. But anyway, that was, so when I made those comments kind of off the cuff earlier, that's all that was involving.
Okay.
And ultimately, I never did go to the desert to meet with the guy from Area 51.
Okay, I'd done some checking on Lazar myself, but I haven't really had a chance to do a lot of it. But I have interviewed Stan Deo, and I hope to be able to do an interview with Stanton, because I had talked to him at the MUFON conference in Denver this summer, which is the Mutual UFO Network. And what do you feel... I mean, with writing all these different books, I mean, I just finished the Nephilim Stargates, I believe, I think that was the name of it now, and you've written the Apollon Rising, is that 2012, is that correct? I mean, because you've got five or six, at least, books out there besides your Forbidden Gates, correct?
I actually don't remember how many I have. I have a lot of books. Tons of...
But they're all interesting because they get into some of this subject around the transhumanism and the various aspects that are involved with what your Forbidden Gates. I mean, it all leads up to this, correct?
Yeah. Actually, what I would tell you is that... here's a strange thing, Melody and Shannon. The book Nephilim Stargates, I wrote that in like... 8 weeks. I wrote it in a giant rush. In my opinion, it's not necessarily the worst book I've ever written.
No, dear.
It's certainly the worst edited book I've ever written, because I wrote it in a gigantic rush. I was leaving the West Coast. We had three big transport vehicles, semis that were bringing everything to the Midwest. I had to get it done, and from there I was leaving to a conference I had to be in. So I just wrote it. I should have never wrote it, actually. And what's strange is I don't care where I go, no matter where I go. I saw this in Ohio, too, just 2 weeks ago. I get people coming up to me talking about how that book, Nephilim Stargates, changed their life, opened their eyes. That book has sold, I can't even tell you, it's just sold by the trainloads. and I look at it and think, wow, that's the worst piece of literature I've ever put out there. So what I would say, if people have read Nephilim Stargates, what they really ought to read is Apollyon Rising 2012, my last book, or this new one, where I actually had time to sit down and do the research and spend time actually crafting the words and putting it together in such a way that each chapter builds on the last chapter, and it makes a point, it makes a case. But here's the good news. A physicist, who's a friend of mine now, I met him a few years ago. He's a brilliant mind. He is a great writer, David Hitt. He wrote the introduction to my new book, Forbidden Gates. But he has agreed, and him and I are going to redo Nephilim Stargates. We're going to actually write that book the way it should have been written. And we're right now setting aside all of the research material. I've already got a giant stack of material. And I'm going to tell you something. I cannot disclose part of what we're going to be talking about, but people are going to be astonished at some of the documents that we got out of the Vatican. And this is not the stuff they've read in the public with, astronomer Jose Funes or Cosmonalgo. There will be stuff in this book related to those guys, but the main literature, the main body of literature, at least in one part of it, although the book has a lot to do with stuff that, it's not related to the Vatican, people are going to be astonished at some of the material in this book because it is breakthrough. It is a true official disclosure. I'm very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're even going to go into the idea of no dimensions whatsoever, dimensionlessness. Or however you would say that word. And David Hitt is going to be doing a great deal of this research with me. People are going to be blown away by this. But so Nephilim Stargates is finally going to be written the way it should have been written.
Now, do you feel that, I don't run across a lot of people dealing into this subject the way that you are. Is it just me not, getting out in the right circles? Or are you kind of alone in trying to get people's awareness into what's going on with the transhumanist movement?
Actually, I think we're on the cutting edge. We've got our own national conference that will be in Branson, Missouri in 2011 in July, the third week of July of this coming year. Chuck Missler will be there. I will be there. Dr. Randall Price will be there. G. Edward Griffin will be there. Gary Stearman of Prophecy in the News will be there. This is going to be a headliner. It's going to be the who's who, really the event to be at. There's going to be between 8 to 10 feature presentations. There's going to be 50 workshops, simulcast, three different news groups there, live broadcasting and doing interviews with the speakers that are going to be there. So, Melody, I just see that we are at a moment in time where, while on the one hand, you have the death of the institutionalized side of Christianity, and frankly, good riddance, but you also have people who truly, are real believers, and you also have real seekers. People who are really seeking. And this is the thing that thrills me. I'll do shows. I do New Age shows. I do all kinds of shows. And what thrills me are people who are truly seekers. I mean, they're seeking both the truth and they're seeking after God. And you see all these statistics right now about people who are turning away from the church or turning away from God. They're turning to Wicca and all these other belief systems. What it shows you is that the general populations have not lost their interest in God, spirituality, or the truth at all. They've only lost their faith in a dead religious construct, and I think that's healthy. I think that's that. I had hoped that the institution would change. Well, it hasn't. so the antidote to that is that people themselves, they become the true body. They become the true seekers of truth. And so I think what we're seeing right now is actually very healthy.
So in other words, it's kind of a knee-jerk to the fact that there's ethics is just kind of lacking out there in our world right now. Is that what, do you see what I'm saying?
I only caught part of what you said.
I said, in other words, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction to the fact that there's very little ethics out there operating in our world right now. I mean, I do know that there's a growing movement. I run into people and those of us that are trying to get truth out there and get, but that's running our governments that seems to be operating in some of these scientific areas. Ethics is really in a minority.
Yeah, well, I would tell you that I have. There are a few things really that I could say. On the one hand, there's the average Joe Blow. That's a terrible phrase, but I mean, there's the average person out there. And these are people who just, they go to work every day, they have a 9-to-5 job, and they're just trying to survive. They pay their taxes, most of them are patriotic, they get their check each week, more than ought to be is held out in taxes, they take whatever's left, they try to pay their mortgage. They got kids that are in school, the wife or the husband, whoever is the, you know, the person that's at home, they get up every day, they take those kids to school. So most families, most people are really just trying to survive in a world right now where there's a great deal of fear and chaos, and a lot of it is actually manufactured. And they're just trying to get along.
Well, I think they should set their sights a little higher.
but so now in what way, though, Shannon, would you say that?
Well, I mean, if you're just trying to survive, then, yeah, you could have daycare, or you could have an institutionalized school system that's teaching kids little by little just what the media, like we've spoken in this show, is teaching us little by little to accept incrementally. Not just the encroachments of liberty in general, but the encroachments onto what a human is, what legal rights of humans are and animals, and what the, you know, the benefits of getting a really good degree so that you can do legal patents for genetic work, because that's where the money is these days, you know? I mean, that's the common wisdom of that, and if you're just gonna set your sights on paying the mortgage at the end of the month and not take a look at the bigger picture, not ask yourself deeper questions, spiritual and otherwise, then you probably trust someone else to just indoctrinate your kids for you into what you consider the basic reading and writing and so forth. But I mean, that's survival mode. That's key that you use that word, because, you know, if you really want to live, if you really want to live like, you know, like the best, you know, the sublime truths that you get out of spiritual readings, including the Bible, whatever, if you want to live like, you know, the people that you admire most say you should live, then you're probably not just going to hand that one off. And you're probably going to notice that, you know, guests like yourself on talk shows like this are really very polite, you know. They're making sure that they, you know, speak to the wider audience and keep their vocabularies so that, you know, a lot of people can really access it, although there might be a more technical discussion that goes on elsewhere. But, you know, you're being very polite about it. You're being very, very graceful. You know, obviously you have a, you know, eloquence that's long developed that way, but perhaps you should be allowed at some point during this discussion to just be like, we're talking about the complete destruction of the human species. Is, you know, that should maybe be said in a loud voice, or someone should scream or jump up and down or do something kind of.
You know, yeah, I actually very, very much appreciate, Shannon, what you just said. Because I will tell you that I never apologize. I'm always very clear that I'm a conservative, I'm a Christian, I have faith in Christ, that's my redemption, I believe in prophecy. I'm always very, very clear about my world view. But the truth is, I also just really care about people. And if I had a neighbor who was gay or who was a Wiccan or who was a whatever, I would want that person to know that I care about them and that it's real. That it's not just, hey, you know what, I've got like a scheme or something, and so I'm going to pretend that I care about you, because really what I'm trying to do is just get you to a point of conversion, but the truth is I don't really care about you. I don't care about anything. I'm trying to build up the tabs on my saved list or something. What I'm telling you is I was in the institution for a very long time. I know how the numbers game and all the... I almost said something I shouldn't have said. I know how all that works. The older I've gotten, the more I really, actually, believe it or not, really do care about people. Now, it does not affect my convictions. I'm not compromising anything. I don't compromise anything with anybody. But beyond my convictions and my worldview and my belief system, I really do care about people, and I want to care about them. And I can tell you that my wife, my family, the Raiders News Network crew, I mean, that's really how we function.
Okay, so ultimately, because, I mean, we're getting to the point where we kind of need to bring it to a close here, but your purpose in getting this information out to the public is to what?
Well, now, on this one issue, the book Forbidden Gates is to make the public aware of what is happening within transhumanism and the emerging fields of technology, and that even our own government reports are predicting that 2012 represents the start of sincere rollout of the human enhancement revolution. I will tell you that I am not against technology. I'm not a bioludite. But when we start talking about crossing over species barriers, combining humans with animals, things like that, I develop real issues. And so the listener who is listening to this show and wants to know, you know, what is the book Forbidden Gates? What is it about? Go to the website, ForbiddenGate.com. There's videos, there's government reports, there's news reports, and you'll be able to educate yourself, which is really important on this issue right now, because conservatives, in my opinion, need to get involved in the discussion, because if we don't, if people, the average person, Joe Blow, the average guy, the average woman who's trying to just send their kids to school, if they don't recognize what is unfolding right beneath their feet and get involved in this discussion, then what we are doing is we are abdicating to the transhumanist community to write the rules for us by which all the rest of us are going to live. And that, right now, is exactly what is happening.
Okay, well, I just want to say one thing. Is what I'm in my research and what I'm finding out is it's kind of like we're being overlooked for the discussion, because I believe that they're doing a lot of this work on us without our permission or discussion, and that, yeah, there may be some people giving their permissions, but I believe that...
Well, are we saying that, like, unlike, you know, in the medical or legal arenas, or when they, you know, decide foreign policy, and of course they bring us into the discussion all the time, this is this one weird area where they're not bringing us into the discussion. I mean, that's, it's certainly not a iconoclastic discipline in that, yeah, because people are thought of as being average, that they, people believe in such concepts of the average Joe, you know, and put, you know, people into classes instead of having them just be either like all of them or just the one, then it leads to the idea that, you know, they don't care, it's too difficult, even at this institution, the radio station, sometimes it just seems like the more people you bring in, the more hassle there is. And so people actively seek to limit the discussion to a small group of people, experts or whatever, even though, I guess, what is the Eisenhower quote that, what's his name, quoted to you back about having, he was talking about the International Climate Change Panel or whatever, but he's talking about an elite group of people deciding things and taking it away from the public arena. Certainly, you know, most of us do not have the genetic prerequisite knowledge to actually, you know, engage this discussion at much of a level other than the, well, I don't feel comfortable with it or it seems right or wrong type discussion, right?
Anyways, what I'm just trying to state is that we've got some issues here that if we don't speak up or find a way to get involved in the discussion, it's going to be taken away from us. And you're saying it's moved on down the road. And if there was a chance that we got to be involved, it won't be there. Am I correct in that statement?
Yes, and the fact that they do not want you involved in the discussion. Those who are writing the rules right now, who've received the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services grants to write their research material, those who have received the grants to write the U.S. National Science Foundation report, Ethics of Human Enhancement, 25 Questions and Answers, that's why they've attacked me at the IEET, because they do not want the public in general even aware of this discussion as it is unfolding right now. They don't even want you to know about it, let alone to be involved in it. So I know we're going to run out of time right now, so
right.
That's. I'll just conclude with that statement.
Well, and that's why I wanted to bring up the point that, you know, you're one of the few that I've run across that really is trying to bring up this discussion, because it is going on around us. And I want to thank you very much, Tom, for coming on the program. And I hope we can do this again at some point. And again, your book is Forbidden Gates, and Raider News Network is your one of your websites, and the other one is Forbidden Gates. ForbiddenGate.com.
Yes, and Melody and Shannon, it was fantastic having a conversation with you tonight.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good night.